At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Okay, we are back.
Where have you been?
You always say that. Well, listen, today is like a special day. We are not in our normal place of New York City or New Jersey.
Where are we?
We are in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of Prince.
Yes.
Andre is not coming with me today.
Yeah, so we're in Minneapolis again. What's funny about it is this time of year, it's usually pretty cold in the northern Midwest. And I was talking to some friends. I'm like, where are you headed? I'm headed to Minneapolis. And they're like, ooh, bundle up. Sounds cold. I'm like, it's actually the same as New Jersey, New York right now.
Which is a shame also.
Why is that a shame?
Well, man, like, it shouldn't be this cold.
It's not that cold.
So, like, some people like fall. I'm like, fall is just going to give us winter, and it's going to betray us.
But it's not winter yet.
I know. Man. But they said in Game of Thrones, winter is coming.
Okay, winter is coming, but it's not here yet.
But we're at this great event. It's the Black Collective Summit. And it's called Collective Sum. And it's a gathering of nonprofit leaders from mostly from the Twin Cities, but also all over the state of Minnesota and nationally. We met some great nonprofit executives from New York City and from California, and it's just been a great time. And so we're excited to really bring a new conversation today.
Absolutely. I am amazed at the number of people and organizations who are fully 100% locked in on social justice issues, eradicating the inequities of racism and all the things that come with it. I was surprised to find so many of those organizations and people concentrated in this state.
It's crazy that this is the place where George Floyd was killed. Like, I don't know if it was already a hotbed for social justice, but it definitely became one in my eyes after. And there's just so many great leaders here, so many great organizations. And we're like super excited to be spotlighting one today. Today, we have a guest, a special guest. This is a very special episode of the Momentum Advisors podcast today, because we are here with Rapa Maka, who's the founder of Nexus Community Partners. And Nexus is literally one of the most significant Black-led nonprofit organizations in the state of Minnesota. And we've got the CEO and the founder, and Nexus just celebrated 20 years in business and in community and fellowship, whatever you want to call it. And we are so proud to welcome Rapa Maka.
Thank you so much. And it's a pleasure to be here with the two of you, especially in this moment with the Collective Sum. You know, we talked about both of those words, both collective and sum. Really meaning that, you know, the collective is represented by all the folks and the voices that are in the room, right? And that collectively we equal more, we sum up to more than just one, right? And a lot of folks that have been doing some very powerful work, both in the nonprofit sector, but also in the space of philanthropy as well, and working with each other to advance change in ways that neither could do alone.
So we've got to give you a proper introduction. We want you to brag about yourself a little bit. Like, you are a graduate from Harvard University, from the Kennedy School of Government, where you received a master's degree in public administration. You're also a graduate of the University of Wisconsin, where you studied sociology. And you've got a number of just accolades. You're a Bush Foundation Leadership Fellow. You are an alumnus of the 2022 Neighborhood Funders Group Philanthropy Forward organization. So many different accolades, but introduce yourself to the people properly.
Rapai Makai. I am the founder and CEO of Nexus Community Partners. We are a community building intermediary, one of the few, I think, in the country as I've traveled around and had conversations with folks from around the country around not just what we do, but how we do it, that makes Nexus a unique intermediary that serves community across the state of Minnesota and beyond.
So talk to us about your founding story. Like, what was the genesis of this organization? And brag on Nexus a little bit, some of the things that you guys are up to.
Well, a couple of things. You know, we come to our work and our efforts with some history behind us. I had received in 2004 a Bush Fellowship. There's a foundation here called the Bush Foundation, Archibald Bush Foundation. And through that, I had gotten the chance to both go out to Harvard to work on a master's degree in public administration, really focusing in on unique creative models of economic development. And then the opportunity to travel to Africa and other places around the country. I went out there with this idea of trying to create a parallel kind of intertwined strategy. One is I had looked around the city and the state of Minnesota. One of the things that I was seeing was that community development in our region was happening in ways that it had nothing to do with the people who lived in those communities, right? You can go to work on Monday morning and come home and Miss Jones' home is tore down and something else is planned and you've had no idea, nobody talked with you, that that's what happens all the time. And so as we were doing work at that time, it was with a social service organization working with families and young people. At the very same time, we were trying to enhance their lives. They had no control over their environment. Wow. And so the idea was how do we bring different voices, especially with the cultural framework, to development in communities so that not only does businesses go or buildings go up, but they go up with the mindfulness to time. When are they going up? How do they go up? Do they reflect certain rituals, the ceremonies that are already happening in communities that make them more than a building and more like a symbol, right?
So perhaps you might have just answered this, but again, I'm surprised at the number of people and organizations that are focused on these issues in this area. Why would you say are the Twin Cities a hotbed for this type of activism?
Yeah, I think that the Twin Cities has for a long time been a innovative, creative space that has been conscious around critical issues impacting especially Black and brown folks. Ever since I was, I started this work a long, long time ago. Back then, we had organizations coming from New Orleans.
Wow.
Doing work, the People's Institute on Undoing Racism and Beyond. This is back in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And so there is a deep-rooted kind of consciousness around race and racism. And not only that, but a systems perspective about those things that has existed in this region for a long time. And so when people come together and have conversations, what happens is new ideas, new insights pop up and folks can gather around it and it has the kind of energy that it's needed to take off.
So one of the things that has become apparent from being at this Collective Sum event here is that, yes, this area, the Twin Cities, is a hotbed for ingenuity from a social justice perspective, but it also seems like there's a lot of racism here. And I'm talking about conversations about highways being just like blowing up Black communities where folks were thriving. And now the community's divided and have never been the same. Talk to us a little bit about the history of this area.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, the Twin Cities is not unlike other cities around this country, right? Where eminent domain has allowed government to run right through neighborhoods, right? Highways. We have a map in our office that describes one of the areas, the neighborhoods in this area, right? And on that map, you can see one version that shows areas that might have slum or might have high potential or might have investment opportunity. And then you overlay that same image or diagram with another later where the highways have been laid and they run right through those areas that were called slums. Mm. You know, it's very clear that this is systematic, that it's planned. And so it's not, I mean, we see it, you know, the Highway 94 ran through Rondo, Black businesses, home ownership, a thriving economic ecosystem just tore up. North Minneapolis, the same thing. So it's not, I mean, it's an interesting thing because it's a dual running process of ingenuity and creativity and imagination at the very same time that is loaded with all kind of race and racial inequities.
We had a speaker just now, Brandon Blackwood, the designer, the fashion designer, the great designer. And one of his early bags said, "End systemic racism." And for a long time, I don't think like folks acknowledge that it exists. Like that people love to point their fingers at Black folks and say, "Why don't you do better?" But they don't acknowledge that there's a whole system sitting on top of our heads.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a difference between knowing and acknowledging. I think folks have known all along. You know, there's nothing new about this. It's not some kind of science that, you know, you really have to, you know, scratch your head hard or think hard about. You know, it's real. It's whether or not folks are willing to lean into to acknowledging it and taking some responsibility for it, right? Folks know. I mean, you can't operate over a very extended period of time a system that has certain outcomes and goals to it and not know what you're doing.
Absolutely. One of our mutual collaborators recently referred to it as intentional ignorance.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't operate a system for hundreds of years by mistake and fumbling, right? You know, and happenstance, right? Folks know and it is planned, it's very strategic. You know, it benefits certain folks way more than it benefits others. I mean, I think that we are part of what is awakening the environment that we're in right now, the moment that we're in right now, is not the opinion or the perspective or the view of the changing demographics in this country, mm-hmm. but the reality mm-hmm. of the changing demographics in this country. You just can't pretend like that's not real. You can't argue anybody that the demographics are not changing. And with that, not only comes different opinions and patterns and ways people celebrate, whole new knowledge systems emerge and take up space,
sure,
in ways that they hadn't taken up space before. And so, I mean, the smart thing to do is to figure out how to leverage all that mm-hmm. to the benefit for all.
Mm-hmm. I'm having a bit of a full circle moment, so I'm going to deviate just a little bit. So when I travel, I like to take in a local news. I like to have some, if I have time, some experience that lets me know I'm not at home. And so I usually watch the local news. So I had the news on this morning, and the headline was about the plans to build a mall at George Floyd Plaza. Like the city council was taking that up this morning, I think. And what I learned was there's legislation that says because of the systemic practices that have been in place, where if more than 50% of the property owners in that area don't support whatever the plans are, that it can't go through. What can you share with us about how you or some of your partners may have been involved in making sure that happened?
Yeah, we acknowledged a moment ago that, you know, the Twin Cities is a kind of hotbed for, you know, racial justice kind of work. Sitting at the base of that is community organizing and community engagement. This community, this region is has deep roots where folks show up to represent their interests. Folks hold to values and visions and don't let go. Right. And so, you know, since the murder of George Floyd, there's a large number of people in community who've not let go of the fact that something needs to symbolize that a Black life was taken at the intersection of 38th and Chicago. Mm-hmm. Right. And that they've organized around it, you know, this comes from there. Mm-hmm. This is the fist. Mm-hmm. This yeah. necklace that I have on is the fist that you see when you enter that space yeah. there.
Yes.
So it's symbolized. And so even when you want to remember it in your mind's eye won't let you because it's there, it's present as a symbol.
Yeah. We went and visited our last trip to Minneapolis, George Floyd Square. And it was just one of those places where I just felt his spirit.
Yeah.
I felt him call out for his mom who had already passed away. I was moved. I also saw poverty all around.
Yeah.
I saw Black folks struggling yeah. all around. And that made me sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were so moved. We had to. Even though we were there together, we had to experience it separately. It was like, yeah, you go do that. I'm way over here. I don't even have words to describe what was going on.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, though, you have to move beyond what's external to internal. Mm-hmm. They're very beautiful, strong Black people living in those homes up and down those streets. There are folks that take their kids, walk their kids to the bus stop every day. Mm-hmm. They get up and go to work every day. They create every day. Yeah. That space is surrounded by beauty as well. You know what I mean?
Very true.
It is, you know, the scar in our mind is what happened on that corner, but there is life that is lived around that intersection.
Amen.
Right? And people not only understand it and experience it as a physical space, but it is identity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Folks call that space home,
mm-hmm.
right? And they did that before the murder of George Floyd, and they do it now, right? There is beauty that lives there. It is what makes opportunity and possibility within reach. Yeah. That there are still folks there who believe in their community and contribute to their community.
And that's the beauty of Black people.
Absolutely.
It's taking something that was thrown away, disregarded, taking mistreatment, and turning it into something beautiful.
Yeah.
And I love that.
I think it's also why on the news segment that I saw just this morning, why we were hearing business owner, property owner, one after the other, say that they opposed the plans to build a mall in that area. Because they were just like, no, you are not going to use our taxpayer dollars to make decisions that impact us without hearing from us.
Folks are not shy about bringing their voices to the forefront.
And these were not just Black folks.
Yeah.
After George Floyd's murder, we were in a moment where there was an acknowledgement across the country, across the world, that Black folks were being mistreated, that police brutality, police sanctioned killings are happening. Money started to flow in. We saw corporate America put millions of dollars aside for Black causes. We saw on the Wall Street side, a ton of new founders get funded. venture capital firms launched. And then even before Trump got elected the second time, we saw a reversal a little bit. And then when the election came, a full 180 at this point. What is it like doing your work that is really dedicated to helping Black people specifically, descendants of slavery, indigenous people? What's it like being in your seat today?
Yeah, I said this a little earlier during the conference, the gathering here, because it was beyond a conference. I think, you know, I said, if you can track the history of this country and you can find where Black lives have been lost and there's a kind of standing, folks stand up. And over time, they sit back down at a pace that the naked eye can't imagine or can't see. But after a while, you notice it's gone from standing to sitting. But the thing that is more important that drives me is, well, I won't say more important, but the thing parallel that drives me is I maintain a bifocal lens. I think I look back over the history of this country as well, and I can say that every major landscaping movement that has ever happened in this country has come out of chaos, adversity, pain. And you name it. Name a century, name a decade where there has been a movement, and you will find that there's also been cases, a condition where folks are resisting something, pushing back on something because they value it. So in this moment, the question for me is not how do I try to figure out how to live in the kind of moving, distracting. What I'm looking for is where's the opportunity in this moment? What movement gets to get defined in this moment? And what is my role and responsibility in that? Right? Because the last thing I can afford to do, and I would propose that anybody else that's serious about change can do, is go down the rabbit hole and pull the dirty end over. Right? We have to seize this moment. And the beauty of it, of this darkness, is that many things that have had us locked in, policies, procedures, all those things that are up in the air now and loose, allow us the opportunity to wedge something different in and in a solid way right now when things settle back down. Because the reality is systems, the kind of power of systems is that they allow for predictability. And when you throw them off their equilibrium, it's their nature to settle back in, to find equilibrium again. Our charge is to find out how to wedge different strategies, opportunities in now so that when it resets, we get to live different.
Wow. If you think about it, it's not much different than the markets, right? When things are spiraling, absolutely, there's always some opportunity there. So we appreciate that. Such a rich discussion, but we're going to have to go to break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Rapal Makah. I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom. Momentum.
So we're back. We're having, I think, a groundbreaking conversation with the CEO and founder of Nexus Community Partners, based in St. Paul, Minnesota, Rupam Mukha. And so we talked a lot about landscape, about the moment versus the movement. Let's talk about Nexus for a little bit. Nexus, in my mind, in our mind, and the reason we wanted to talk to you today, it really is a model for our entire country, for our entire diaspora of Black people, for how we can organize, how we can use our own resources and some assistance from some allies to pull ourselves up out of this situation that we're in. Let's talk about Nexus Community Partners. My first question is, can you walk us through, we're going to spend time on each program, but walk us through Nexus Community Partners.
Yeah, Nexus is a community building intermediary, and we very intentionally call ourselves a community building intermediary as opposed to a community development intermediary. And the distinction for us is that where community development organizations' primary focus is on the built environment, you know, development. Our primary focus is on the human, social, and cultural capital in communities. And we know that you can, if you strengthen and build out place without building out the people, what you really drive is gentrification, right? Folks that can't afford to live in the places that have been invested in. And so our position is that of looking at the people, the development of the people. And we see ourselves as one side of a two-sided coin, because we also know that place matters. It is bigger than geography. It's more than geography. As I said earlier, it is identity. People have memory of place that shapes the way they understand themselves, right? So we see ourselves in partnership with community development. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. But we started as a pilot. And it was back in the early 2004, around that time. And it really was a pilot that was one of five across the country. And ours in the Twin Cities was really zeroed in on two corridors, one on the east side of St. Paul, one in South Minneapolis. And it was really to drive the kind of economic development that was happening on those corridors through culturally based organizations, CDCs. And the focus was entrepreneurship, homeownership, and financial literacy. And it operated for about 3 years as that, as a community development organization. In 2007, it came to a point where it was asking the question, where do we go from here? Mm-hmm. Parallel to that 2007 period, I was out at Harvard doing this thing that I was talking about earlier. I mentioned that I was talking about community development, but the other two streams of thought that had been in my mind is, how do you build an economic development model for the Black community that is built on cultural values, tenets, practices, as opposed to race-based practices? Right? Because what I had seen was other cultural communities meet mainstream economic opportunities, move through them, holding tight to culture, and come out on the other side with culturally specific strategies. But we were entering that same mainstream economy with a race-based framework. Mm. And race don't teach you to be with each other. Culture does, right? And so that had been part of my thinking going out there. The whole area, what is the intersection between community development and community engagement was on my mind. So I came back and actually knew most of the folks who were part of the organization that had been operating prior to my coming. And I actually knew the executive director of the organization. And I was called to enter into a contract to design the next phase of what the organization would look like. And I brought all that I had been thinking about to bear on a strategy for moving forward. And they all liked it, but they also said, who's going to do it? Right. And so I came on as a consultant to design it and then was hired as the executive director.
And in doing that, which of the five programs that exist today, which one was the first one?
The first one was what we call the Community Engagement Institute. So as part of the transition from the old model to a new model, I went out into the community and I asked the question, what have we been doing that you value? What more can we be doing that would be of value? And if we were doing it, what would it look like? Tell us how you know. Mm. And the response that I got was that we appreciate that you are zeroed in on Black and Brown folks. We appreciate that you understand the importance of geography, but we think you should spread. But we think you're missing something here. And so I asked, what is that? And they told me community engagement. And I was like, community engagement, what are they talking about? Mm-hmm. Right, so broad. But the reality is this. If you look in cultural communities, economic strategies and initiatives and enterprises don't come from individuals. They happen in basements of churches, around kitchen tables, on front porches, where people collectively engage around a missing or an opportunity in their community, right? Mm-hmm. And then somebody brings it forward. It translated all the economic development and investments that we were doing around financial literacy and entrepreneurship and home ownership. It framed it very differently for me, that all these ideas that are coming forth are not individual entrepreneurs. And so what we did was we took all of our financial economic development work or lifted it up, slid community engagement under it, and let all that back down. With community engagement being the base of everything that we did going forward. Part of that was going out and supporting community organizations that were doing community engagement, and convening them. And out of that convening came this kind of shared interest in being in space together, figuring out these organizations, being in space together, figuring out strategies together. It became the first of its kind community engagement institute in the country with faculty that were elders in different cultural communities.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to walk through each of the current programs of Nexus in just a moment. But before we do that, walk us through the four shifts.
Yeah. Yeah. And let me ground you why the four shifts. So some time ago, as we were going about our work, we decided that 70% of our work had to be landscape shifting. It had to change systems. It had to move policies. It had to create new tables for decision making. And that the other 30%, we would acknowledge that we had to be in a response mode. The 70% had to be very strategic. It had to be targeted towards changing the landscape. We moved our work into four areas that then got organized into the shifts. The first, continuing to invest in community and deeply and walking alongside those investments, because we knew it took more than money for some of these organizations to be impactful. They needed someone to help them navigate build relationships, and so forth. But it was also the place that we learned the most about creative, innovative ideas before they rose above the radar. I will say this. Let me just inject this. You're talking about speaking of every initiative that you will hear me talk about related to Nexus is the first of its kind in the region, in the state, or in the country. Everyone.
Wow.
Everyone.
Well, that's why you own the blueprint.
Yeah, everyone. So investing in community and the second community leadership, right? The second area was philanthropy. We knew that we had to. There's this insight that came a long time ago to me that when you're doing innovative, creative work, sometimes you have to create the environment that the work happens in at the same time that you're doing the work. Otherwise, the environment squeezes out the life of what you're trying to do before it can take root, right? So philanthropy as a system, a sector, we needed to influence. And as a result, we were one of the co-founders of the Northside Funders Group, a group of about 19 foundations that was focused on the north side of Minneapolis. We were the founding member and staff, the East Side Funders Group, about 21 foundations focused on the east side of St. Paul. I did two terms on the Minnesota Council of Nonprofit, Minnesota Council of Foundations Board. And then we helped to give birth to the Black Collective. So all of this was to begin to influence philanthropy and the way that it engaged with community. The other area, significantly, is community development itself. And so it had two prongs. One was we engaged mainstream community development organizations and helped them take on community engagement as part of the way that they did their work. The second piece was that we needed to build out an ecosystem of culturally based CDCs. So right now in the Twin Cities area, Nexus is the first in or one of the first in for all the major culturally based organizations, CDC based organizations in the Twin Cities.
Oh.
Everyone.
Yeah.
All the way from African Development Center to Latino Economic Development Center to Asian Economic Development Services to Black Women's Wealth Alliance we've been in there. So that's the third area.
I love that even the name Nexus is like you guys really are at the intersection.
Yeah, we're at this intersection of these things, right? And then the last was government, that we knew that no matter how well you do what you do, at some point you're going to have to engage in policy mm-hmm. or policy impact,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we partner with both the city of St. Paul and the city of Minneapolis, particularly around cooperative business models. And we have a contract, a multi-million dollar contract with the city of St. Paul now to do both cooperatively owned businesses, business conversions, but real estate investment cooperatives as well. And then we were a major player in the build out of our transit system funding organization. So those four areas of work have a lot of stuff happening in them that we organize into four ships.
So give me those four ships.
The four ships are authorship.
Authorship.
Leadership.
Leadership.
Ownership.
Ownership.
And stewardship.
And stewardship.
And those four areas are very deliberately focused in on because we know this. Who plans for,
mm-hmm.
who governs, who owns, and who stewards money is at the heart of the ethos of this country and all of the inequities that you can name.
Yeah.
You can tag them all. And if we're not doing work in those areas, then we don't shift landscapes, right? So those ships are not just nice, you know, areas where it'd be nice to do things. They are very intentionally targeted at shifting landscapes.
Yeah.
And we can get into some of the details of the strategies, like the boards and commissions leadership.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about that one. So one of the... Would you call it a ship? Would you call it a program, an initiative? I want to talk about BCLI, which is the Boards and Commissions Leadership Institute. Let's talk about that one a little bit.
Yeah. So the Boards and Commissions Leadership Institute is a seven-month program that draws talented folks, and talented defined broadly, talented folks from BIPOC communities, trains them up over that seven-month period of time, and strategically places them on boards and commissions in five areas: economic development, transit, workforce development, housing, and health. And it is part of that governance that you know, the leadership who governs strategy. And what we knew was that if we didn't bring new voices to decision-making tables, that folks would be responding to or trying to undo policy impacts that was happening within their lives. And this gave us an opportunity to set the table differently. Mm-hmm. And now we have, in the through the Boards and Commissions Leadership Institute, and they train them on Robert's Rules, negotiating, zoning, all those things that where decisions get made that impact people's lives. At this point in time, we have over 160 alumni through that program who are spread out across the metro. Mm. We have folks that are at county boards, mm-hmm. on county boards. We have folks that are on city councils. We have folks that are at the Metropolitan Council. We have folks that have been elected to Congress. Mm-hmm. They've gone on to Congress. And these are appointed seats, but they've gone on to elected seats as well. Yes. We have House of Representatives that have come through BCLI, and then we convene them. We bring them back together. Our vision is to have 100, 200 strong folks that have gone through common experience, shared analysis, and strategy out there in the state of Minnesota, making decisions in relationship to each other.
How do you identify people to participate in these programs? Is there an application process? Do you go seeking them?
People apply, but what we ask is that people apply with an organization supporting you. And it's not just that the organization is like, you know, if they need some resources, but leadership is contextual, right? Somebody else has to know you're a leader as much as you do, right? Right. And so part of it is bring somebody with you that know what you do on behalf of your community.
Yeah, I heard someone say, the facilitator in one of the sessions today, if you're a leader, you got to have some followers. Yeah. Otherwise, you're just taking a walk.
Yeah.
It was Minister Jeanette. Yeah.
Taking a walk is hilarious.
Yeah. It was like,
and it is like I said, we have alumni from the Boards and Commissions Leadership Institute sitting at boards and commissions all the way again from city council. All the way up to elected officials. We're now in conversations with a couple of foundations where, as our state, we talked about the Twin Cities, the demographics in the state of Minnesota, in rural Minnesota.
A little different.
Well, wait a minute. And greater Minnesota are shifting significantly. Mm. You can find Black and brown folks in places that you never would have imagined wow. before. And so
I always say, man, they think they can get away from us. No. We're coming too.
but here's the deal. I always say is it is very, very powerful to get prepared for the future that is coming, but it's even more powerful to meet the future halfway.
Yeah.
Right? So we know that in those geographies, as those cities, as those townships emerge, people will be placed in decision-making positions.
Yeah.
And if the population demographics reflect a diverse set of people, then those tables need to reflect a certain, you know, a diverse set of folks. And so what we're saying now is let's begin to build the infrastructure now so that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when those cities or towns are up and flourishing, or, yeah, or more so than they are now, or more developed than they are now, that that the decision-making tables reflect the folks that are living there.
Love that. So you guys are creating leaders. I know that these people have been identified as leaders already, but you're really building them up, giving them the training and the common experience. My question is, do they remember you guys when they get into these highfalutin places?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Many of the speakers that speak at the graduations of BCLI are folks that have gone through the cohort, mm-hmm, and they're coming back sharing their experiences.
Wow.
You know, and it's done in a cohort model, because we believe cohorts foster almost every one of our initiatives are done in cohort models. That's the other thing.
Love that.
Because we believe that community gets developed, mm-hmm, in those spaces. You know, not just the skills or the tools get developed, but people connect with people.
Great. What's interesting is y'all could have been done right there with the Leadership Institute, but y'all were not done. There's several other initiatives, and we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll talk some more with Rapal Makha about Nexus Community Partners and how it's a model for, it's hard to say philanthropy. It's hard to say nonprofit leadership. It really is a model for the Black community nationally. And we'll hear a little bit more about that after the break.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Momentum.
We're having fun. We're with my big brother, Rapal Makha, our big brother, Rapal Makha, and we're talking about community building and really using the resources that we have to build more resources for us. Before the break, we talked about the Boards and Commissions Leadership Institute, which is just one aspect of Nexus Community Partners.
So, Rapal, we'd like to hear more about another program of Nexus Community Partners. Can you talk to us about the North Star Black Cooperative Fellowship?
Yeah, it is. It is one of the other signature initiatives that falls under ownership, right? And I usually think about these things with a kind of a frame that sits around them. And the frame for this one is sometimes you don't have to teach people new things. All you really need to do is help them remember what they already know.
Right. Wow.
And North Star Black Cooperative Fellowship is a 7-month cohort-based strategy that really takes Black folks back to their history, reminds them of their history of collective care and cooperative ownership, right? And so we do a deep dive into history and the different ways that we've taken care of ourselves economically over time, both financially and in terms of social care, right? And what we've done is did a really deep dive around that, some education and history around it. And then out of that, design enterprise models that then participants in the cohort can implement as either housing cooperatives, they could be business cooperatives, they could be childcare cooperatives, but they are cooperatively owned and they're rooted in culture and collective care.
So you mentioned like this concept of the cooperative, which has been around for a long time. Maybe we didn't call them cooperatives back in the day, but like it's a business model.
Right.
Talk about like break down that concept for the aspiring entrepreneur who may not know that this is out there, because all we're taught is capitalism. We're not taught cooperation.
Yeah, the cooperatives, I'll touch on a number of angles. One is that they are democratically owned businesses, right? They are businesses, but they also have structure. So there's management. You know, you have to have someone who has experience in finance. You have to have someone, you know, so it is a business. And it is intended to earn profit, right? It may not be a capitalist-driven kind of maximizing profit kind of strategy, but it brings ownership to more than one entrepreneur, right? It spreads wealth more broadly. And typically, it anchors that wealth to community because most folks who are who are part of cooperatives buy their homes in the communities that their business exists in, right? So it is a way of bringing ownership to folks in a much more broader way. But I always emphasize this as well. That because it's cooperatively owned, no one individual can sell that business.
Mm-hmm.
You can't decide that I'm out and I'm going to sell this business, or I'm going to take this business and move it someplace else because there's a great deal more incentives for me over there in that city. You can't do that. The other thing that because it anchors the business to the community and there's community ownership, and especially the ownership of people owning their own labor,
mm-hmm.
what you get is an anti-gentrification.
Come on.
Model.
Yeah.
Right. The other piece
they can't take it away from.
Yeah, you can't. Right. And what? Yeah, that's its own and it's anchored. Right.
Yeah.
The other piece that is very powerful about cooperatives and cooperatively owned businesses is that its members, its owners, can be people who never thought about themselves owning anything.
Wow.
Right.
A lot of people don't own much.
Yeah. And the idea of owning it and the risk that come with owning by yourself is not worth leaning into. But when you're with a group of folks who've been dedicated to cooperative to the success of a business or the building of a business, you come in with skin in the game.
Wow.
They outperform traditional businesses. They have better health care than traditional businesses. They have far less turnover than traditional businesses. They are ways that wealth gets spread more broadly across communities, and they allow for generational wealth.
Love that. Any specific businesses you'd like to highlight, just as an example for folks to understand how this concept of the cooperative business structure?
Yeah, and it can be broad. We've supported cleaning businesses where the folks that go in and clean buildings and so forth are cooperatively owned. Grocery stores, cooperatively owned grocery mm-hmm. stores that bring healthy food to communities.
Yes.
Right? Housing co-ops.
We just talked about the Mamdani effect on our podcast, because one of the things that he suggested for New York City that is viewed as controversial is a government-involved grocery store with food cooperatives being the source of the food.
Yeah, you know, if you get a chance, there's a grocery store in West Oakland called Mandela Market. That's cooperatively owned, sits right in West Oakland, and provides to that community healthy foods, a space where you go where you feel honored, right? Mm-hmm. You feel connected to it. The people who you see operating things live around the corner, and the quality is better because, again, folks are not just showing up at work. If they're not performing well, the business don't do well, and then they don't have, they have investment in this, right? Mm-hmm. So I just think that they're a different strategy, and they're not meant to replace, you know, family-owned businesses or individual entrepreneurs or sole proprietors, but they are intended to spread our toolbox of economic strategy tools.
Mm-hmm. Great. So, Rapat, we are covering, like, we want to, we cannot rush this. We're out of time for this show, but can we get you to keep talking about this? And we're going to turn this into a two-parter, and folks will tune back in next week and they'll hear the rest of it.
Yeah.
So we'll break for now, but we'll bring you back very shortly.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.